أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم I'm your host Nabil Awan This is a topical discussion program that addresses the issues that matter to you Brothers and sisters, I welcome you to the new dawn Living in the West can be an uphill struggle at the best of times And so as a result, maintaining our Islamic identity becomes harder and harder And often the complaints of the youth revolve around the fact that the elders just don't understand. Today's discussion will tackle those subjects which you, the viewers, have written in to us about. Subjects that are often left out in Islamic discussions and Islamic circles. We will journey from the dizzy heights of sporting prowess to the nitty-gritty of environmentalism. Today's show is entitled Quintessentially Muslim. With me to discuss this topic are two brothers. The first is brother Ali Abdullah, who is currently an engineer working in the energy sector. He has been a long-standing servant of the community, helping to arrange events from Islamic art exhibitions to interfaith events. Next to him is brother Hassan Ali Walji, who is currently reading for a degree at the University of Leicester. He is also a keen philanthropist, and his greatest achievement to date was helping to build a school in South Africa. We welcome you to the show. As I mentioned in my introduction, this is a show that is being based on the questions that have been sent in to us by the viewers. So before I actually get into the nitty-gritty of the discussion, I'd ask you one question. And that is that should we really be helping this society? There are people out there that would argue that this is a kafir country. And so, as a result, we shouldn't help it. What are your views on that, Brother Ali?
We need to first understand what we mean by society. The Prophet ﷺ has told us to treat people with respect. Now, in society, take for example an infant. An infant is dependent on his mother, but his mother is dependent on the wider community. We tend to find then that a society is a group of people that help each other out. To find somebody that would say that they're self-sufficient in a society is a phenomenon. Take the examples in Yemen at the moment, where a lot of people are being killed on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Purely for the reason of practicing their beliefs. Now, in living in this society, actually, I am very thankful for this society letting us to practice our religion and expressing our beliefs freely, where we tend to find in even Muslim countries we don't get that chance.
Okay, Brother Hassan, would you like to add anything?
Yeah, I mean, Brother Ali raised some good points there. And I mean, the definition of society really is the interactions between groups of people. I mean, as I believe that society cannot function where people just take. It's got to be give and take. And as people, as Muslims, we take from the society, whether that is just using the local services as the library, or whether that's actually when your grandmother is walking across the road and someone helps her, that's taking from society. And as a result, we need to give back, otherwise society will not function.
My second question, again, is something that is raised by our viewers, and that is that do Muslim youths living in a secular society find this society somewhat boring? Let me explain what I mean by that. In this society, the only way or perceived way to have fun on, for example, a Friday night or a Saturday night is to go out to the pubs or the clubs and get drunk, dance, you know, and everything else that's associated with a night out. Are there any Islamic ways of having fun?
I mean, currently I'm in my second year at university, and everyone knows university is the best time of your life. Well, not only do you sort of find your path in education, but also you find yourself sort of dancing, clubbing, enjoying yourselves, having the best memories. And looking back at my first year, I didn't do any of those things. I don't feel like I've missed out whatsoever. I mean, there are alternatives you can do to sort of switch and replace those sort of things. I mean, I have a really good group of friends, some Muslim and some not. And on a Friday night, we might go bowling, might go play Laser Quest, or in the winter, just watch a film with your friends, sit down and converse. A lost art form nowadays. And I feel those things are far more beneficial for me and replace with as much fun going to a club and getting drunk.
Brother Ali?
Yeah, I agree with Brother Hassan. There are many ways you can go about and having fun that don't tend to be haram. I mean, the amount of things that Islam has said are haram are far less than the actual things that are halal for you to do. You can go out, watch movies, go to the gym, you know, play sports. I have a friend, he's a non-Muslim and he can drink. But when I ask him, you know, why don't you drink? In his own words, he says, the reason why I don't drink is because I do not like to be locked out of my mind. So you can have fun and you do not need to be intoxicated to be able to have some fun.
Okay. Brother Ali, being a working person out there in the wider society, there's a culture that every Friday night, people from the offices will go out to the pub, they'll go out to the club in order to, you know, wind down. Now, when you're presented with that situation, and, I mean, Brother Hassan, at universities, you have people's birthday parties, you have, you know, celebration for the end of exams. People find that they're being forced by their work colleagues or by their fellow peers in order to go to a place which is essentially haram and against the laws of Islam. Do you have any suggestions for our viewers on how they can avoid going or being forced into going to a pub or a club?
I tend to find is the most important thing that we should do is firstly we should approach people in a fair and a considerate manner. This is what Islam teaches us as well, that we should speak to people in the most kindest of ways. Don't be afraid of saying what you like to do when you like to socialize. People do like you when you're honest with them, and they do respect you for that.
Brother Hassan, would you like
to add anything? I mean, just to pick up that point, I mean, there are times when I'm asked to go somewhere, say for someone's birthday or to celebrate end of exams, and you don't need to go to a pub and drink. I mean, that's a misconception. People equally enjoy going bowling. You can suggest going for a curry night, pizza night, etc. And people are more than willing to compromise because 90% of people are decent people who respect your boundaries. And if it does come to the point where everyone's like, right, we're going out to this club and going to get totally wasted, you don't have to go. There's no compulsion in that. And people respect that as well. I mean, no one can force you to do anything you don't want to.
I suppose that would link in with our discussion last week with Sheikh Shabir Hassan Ali in how to open an interfaith dialogue with members of the non-Muslim community, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, we should capitalize on these sort of moments and explain to people what our views are, for example, about drinking and what Islam says about drinking and why we as Muslims do not believe in drinking and the reasons behind it.
Brother Hassan.
Yeah, I mean, to pick up on that point, I think it's a really good way to start setting boundaries. If people understand sort of your moral compass, the way you act in the office place, you know, say, right, I don't go out to pubs and drink, but I'll happily go out to get pizza, they sort of get a feel for what sort of person you are. And as a result, when you approach these interfaith dialogues, they're not so sort of ignorant about things, they're not so precarious about things, they're quite happy to talk to you.
Okay. Staying on the topic of interfaith and being a moral, you know, citizen and a role model for others that are in society, there are Muslims out there that want to give charity. And when they do give charity, they only give it to Muslim organizations or Muslim charities that are benefiting Muslims. What are your views on that? Should I only give charity to organizations that help only Muslims, Brother Ali?
No, I think we should actually give charities to Muslim organizations as well as non-Muslim organizations. We living in this society are mostly surrounded by non-Muslim people, but it does not mean that we should not help our fellow citizens. At the end of the day, if they're not our brethren in faith, they are our brethren in humanity, and we do have a certain duty of care towards them.
Brother Hassan?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with Brother Ali there. For example, we have big charities like Cancer Research UK, and it's not called Muslim Cancer Research UK or Christian Cancer, it's Cancer Research UK. And cancer affects all of us, whether Muslim or Christian or Hindu. And the work they do helps all of us. So you can't just say, you know, I'm just going to give to this Muslim charity, and then if I, God forbid, get cancer, I'll take their support. You have to give back as well. Because, yeah, like I said, it affects everyone.
Okay, I mentioned in my introduction to you, Brother Hassan, that you travelled to South Africa on behalf of a charity to help build a school. Could you explain a bit more about what was involved in that trip?
Yeah, I mean, over a 2-year period, a group of us raised approximately £50,000. And remember, these are a group of students, sort of range of 17, 18, 19-year-olds. We raised £50,000, then went to South Africa for a month, trying to keep costs as low as possible. We lived in tents, cooked off trangers, trying to give as much money as we could to the community. And I mean, I get a lot of sticks saying, oh, you did this big project in South Africa in a non-Muslim community. It could have been better funded off in Pakistan or India. And for me, it comes back to the point I made originally, which is your duty is to help everyone, whether it be Muslim or not. Mm-hmm. For me, South Africa, having been on holiday there, spending quite a lot of time there, gave a lot to me. The experiences I've got, I've always treasured. And I felt that I needed to give back to that community. And I think that's what it comes down to when it comes to charity. By all means, give to Muslim charities. You know, that's your duty. But also feel duty-bound to give to non-Muslim charities because they help all of us as well.
Now, moving our debate further towards the arts, one way that Islamic culture and heritage has been preserved throughout the years is through the arts, be it through drawing, traditional art, sculptures, and through music, through drama, all of these things, through literature, they've all somehow transmitted Islamic culture to newer and newer generations. Do you think that this is an avenue that we as British Muslims should be exploring? And are we exploring it enough, Brother Ali?
In recent years, there has been a surge of Muslim films coming out into the mainstream, where we've seen films on holy personalities and activities and events in Muslim worlds coming across to people. And we can use art to merge two cultures together. And now, Islam has always used, for example, calligraphy to express its beliefs and write holy words down using calligraphy. By introducing calligraphy into museums, for example, we're able to show our presence within the wider community.
I think you were also integral in organizing an Islamic art exhibition in a museum, were you not?
Yes, that's right.
Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah, the exhibitions that we organized was to do with Islamic culture and events, important events within the Muslim community. And we managed to get a lot of kids involved in drawing things up and showing their understanding of Islamic events through arts. And this was then exhibited in the museums for other people to view.
Okay. Brother Hassan, are we exploring the arts enough here in the UK?
I personally feel we're not. I mean, I've been very fortunate. Earlier this year, I went to Turkey and saw the Topkapi Palace, where they've got a big Islamic art museum there. And the place in Turkey, I mean, the exhibitions they've got, the artifacts they've got, for me, that rekindled my passion for the history of Islam. Not just learning about the teachings of the Prophet, but about the time, the context that it was all done in. I mean, I've also visited the Islamic Art Museum in London and the small exhibition in Cambridge. And while they both have lovely pictures and scriptures and sculptures, there's not really enough there, I'd say, to rekindle your passion for the history of Islam.
That's art, culture, you know, sculptures, paintings and things. But what about things like drama? You know, you are getting Muslim artists that are coming up and they're painting the odd bit of calligraphy, but do you believe that we're exploring enough in the fields of, for example, drama, in the fields of music and these things? Is Islam being portrayed enough through these different art forms?
I'd have to say no there. I mean, everyone says a picture's worth 1,000 words. And then his family said a moving picture, essentially a film, is worth 100 times more than that. Now, I find that there's not enough in the mainstream about Islamic dramas, Islamic picture movies. Mm. If you think about it, when a non-Muslim or even a Muslim walks off onto the street into, say, the Cambridge art exhibition, they might see some beautiful Arabic writing, they might see a picture, but they may not understand it. And even if they read the small caption beneath it, they may just think, oh, this is quite beautiful, and not take anything away from it. But with a movie, a drama, because it has a plot, it has some sort of, there is a definite meaning there. At least you know that person can take something away from there. And I think this is the way we should step forward into the 21st century and say, right, tell our young budding artists to say, this is your new challenge.
I think to an extent I'd agree with Brother Hassan that there isn't much art, Islamic art, that is expressed by the Muslim community. But there are very inspirational youths and youngsters who have come now and they express Islamic beliefs through anashids, through doing dramas in theatres. What our duty is as Muslims, I think, is that we should encourage those individuals and we should focus more our attentions on Islamic art. There is definitely a room for improvement.
Yeah, I mean, the non-Muslims have, in fact, capitalized on a lot of Islamic ideas. If you take the example of Karbala, just type into YouTube Passion Plays Karbala and you'll find all different type of non-Muslims that have come forward, created some sort of dance moves, or however they wish, but they portrayed the story of Karbala, the feelings that one gains from that story in the way of dance, in the way of drama, where we as Muslims have lacked. Keeping on that topic of lack of participation, I want to move over to another area where people have been writing into us about, and that is the sports. It seems that many Muslims shy away from becoming professional sportsmen. And Brother Hassan, you were a successful member of the golfing industry, being sponsored by a major brand as well. Did you face any difficulties with your golfing career, especially because that sport is generally considered to be elitist?
I mean, golf's quite a, as you said, golf is quite an elite sport by its definition. It's etiquette, it's sort of the stringency, there's always a lot of money associated with that. But it's just a perception that's elitist. The actual sport itself can be played by anyone, anywhere. But I personally, at first, I found a lot of problems. And I don't think it was much to do with my religion, because people wouldn't inherently know that when they first met me. But it was more to the colour of my skin, my age, where I lived in the community, like where I lived in the city, etc. And it was met with sheer ignorance. They would think, oh, you know, this brown person should stick with a sport, you know, cricket or something. It's some sort of really stereotypical ignorance. But what I found for myself was I'd take that. You used to get me really fired up, you used to get me angry. I'd take that sort of anger and turn it into passion, and then I mean, I'd hit the gym twice as hard, just to prove them wrong. And I think that's the way we should tackle all things. You take the negative and turn it into passion for your sport.
And what advice would you give to those young people that are watching who want to go far in sports?
Yeah, I mean, alhamdulillah, I managed to get quite far in golf, and then through injury I was pulled back 100 times. But the lessons I've learned, I sort of learned 3 lessons, really. I mean, first and foremost, keep it in perspective. And this is one of the most important things. You've got to keep in perspective that it is just a sport. And even if it is a career, it's just a working career. You need to have a balance. But when you get a balance right, you'll find it far easier to progress. You find it far easier to keep motivated. And my second piece of advice is keep the faith. If you have a bad day training, if you have a bad football match, baseball match, etc., it's not the end of the world. You know, keep the faith, keep working hard. And I think my final point, which I got taught at a very young age, and it sort of applies in all aspects of life, is keep it simple. Regardless of what you do, if you simplify it down, if you say football is 22 people running after one ball, trying to get it at two ends, when you think of it that way, all the negative thoughts, all the difficulties sort of go away, and you'll find it a lot easier to keep focused and keep training hard.
Now, a lot of people do not participate in sport or go far in sport because, unfortunately, their parents are not very supportive of them. Parents don't seem to accept a career in the sporting industry or career in sports to be much of a life. Do you agree?
I can understand the point of view, but it, in my opinion, it's a very sort of old generation idea. I find when it comes to people who tell their parents, you know, right, Mom, I want to become a professional runner, there are two problems they face. One is from more sort of our communities, which is we like to label our children. We like to label our children with titles like, oh, my son's a plumber, my son's a doctor, my son's a teacher, my daughter's a teacher, etc. And in a sporting career, it's hard to sort of say that with pride for some reason. We seem to shy away. You know, our son could be the best ice hockey player in the country, but we still sort of tend to shy away because it's not a profession. It's just a sport. That's the first thing. And I think this is sort of an ingrained, sort of old school mentality, if you will. I think the second half is a general problem. And this is one that I believe has some truth and some lessons to learn from it. And that is, what if you get injured? Where do you go from there? I mean, like myself, I aspired to a career in golf. And then after an injury, I hardly play now, but well anyway. But I had a backup plan, which was to sort of go through a medically related career. And now I'm at university studying. And I think that's one of the most, that's the biggest concern for parents. You know, what if something happens? What if he's not good enough? What if she's not good enough? And I think what we need to do is sit down with your children and say, look, I wish you the best of luck. You know, we'll support you in every way we can. But we need to think of a backup career. And I think some of the best sports people that illustrate this are people like Phil Mickelson, professional golfer, and George Foreman. I mean, Phil Mickelson, before starting his career, got his degree. And now he's world number two. And George Foreman, well, he finished his career and made grills. I mean, if you want to start making biscuits or crisps or something after your career, then that's a great backup plan.
Brother Ali, would you like to add anything about parents' stubbornness to allow their children to progress in the field of sport?
For sure. I mean, there is a stigma in our community that sports is not seen as a career. But I think for our youths, they should really respect the culture of our parents. But also for our parents is that they should understand that things in this society are different, and things that we do perceive sometimes tend to be different than we do think. And one of the important thing is, I mean, yes, Islam does encourage us to participate in physical activity, and also science has proven that there is benefits in having physical activity. So we should really encourage that, and we should harness that in our community. But one thing to remember is as well is that we should always adhere to our Islamic teachings whilst we're playing sports. And for example, keeping adhere to our dress codes and not participating in gambling or intermingling of sexes. That's something we should be very conscious of.
Excellent. We're going to take a short break now and cut to a nasheed.
يا آمنة طاب لك من ربك ما قد وهب أعطاك خلقا ساميا فيه المعالي والأدب فمحمد كيف بشر يأتي بأعجاز الصور ويقص آيات العجب ويقص آيات العجب
وآمنا بلسر أيو with your son the one of love God graced you with him so full of meaning and virtue from heaven words can't explain the reason of your grace our hearts just contain a longing for your face
لقد أتانا رحمة يئد المفاسد والفتن ويصون أعراف العرب ويصون أعراف العرب
فهو
وبخلقه متكرما
ليس بجاه أو نسب
ليس بجاه أو نسب
Our hearts call for you enchanting as the starry night for you right
أغواني حب المصطفى نبع القداسة والصفا
شتان بينه والذهاب
شتان بينه والذهاب إني الموالي سيدي فاشفع بذاك الموعد يا من به الشكر وجا يا من به الشكر وجا
Welcome back. With me in the studio is Brother Ali Abdullah and Brother Hassan Ali Walji, discussing the topic about being quintessentially Muslim. Before we went to the break, we were discussing about participation of Muslims within sport and how we're lacking, and within the arts, and how we really need to go forward in that. I want to change the focus of the discussion now to pressure groups. And ask you, what do you think about Muslims having an active participation in pressure groups which have good causes but are not necessarily Islamic? Groups such as Greenpeace, Brother Hassan.
Yeah, I mean, the thing, for example, taking Greenpeace as an example, they push an agenda that just doesn't just suit our Muslim identities, but it suits everyone as human beings. And when we all know, for example, the environment isn't doing us any favours, and we're certainly not doing any favours for our children and future generations. And I think then it's important to support those sort of groups. If they take your stance morally and they have no objection to sort of our Islamic teachings, then they should, we should be in there with them. It's our duty to help, so that way we can preserve our planet, our way of life, our way of thinking for our future generations.
Brother Ali?
Yes, we have to understand that we are here in the earth as trustees of this earth, that God has made us responsible, that we have to take care of this planet. Like Allah said in the Quran in chapter 22, verse 65, that Allah has made this earth subject for human beings. It is for our disposal. But we still have to show due respect, as we are responsible and we will be answerable back to God for our actions that we do here. Now, carrying on with Greenpeace, Greenpeace is an organization that tries to bring about positive change through action. Now, if such organizations are raising good awareness and are doing something good for the community, and for sure, as Muslims, it is our duty to look after our planet. Just as the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has taught us that you should, as a Muslim, you shouldn't cut down trees that are beneficial for people. These are some of the green issues that the Prophet has talked about. Now, groups such as Greenpeace try to bring about positive change through action. And they have made quite a lot of differences, and they have campaigned on many occasions on pollution, on banning dumping toxic waste into the rivers. Now, such organizations are looking after the environment and are doing good. I don't see any reason why we as Muslims shouldn't join such groups and join such campaigns.
You also work in your professional career as an engineer within the energy sector, working on environmentally friendly ways of producing energy. Do you think that we as Muslims, having this whole vast array of teachings that we have from the Holy Prophet, from the Quran, do we do enough to help the environment?
You're right. If we look at, go back in history 1400 years ago, way before it became fashionable to refer to things as political correctness or animal rights, the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, in his actions, has, even in those barbaric times, had banned the use of animals for entertainment. Throughout the Quran and the Hadith of the Prophet, it's always emphasized the importance of nature. And if we look for, in the Quran, Allah has always said to look for His signs in nature. So for a Muslim, nature is very important. And as a Muslim, so we should try and look after nature. I mean, there is many cures in nature. For example, the miracle drug, which is known as penicillin, that is comes from a fungus, yet it kills millions of people. Unfortunately, throughout the throughout the forces of history, the awareness of the environment in the Muslim community has attenuated, and I think there is. We as Muslims should try and re-establish those values and core teachings of Islam in our society.
So we're not doing enough?
No, I don't. I think there is definitely room for improvement, as I say.
Brother Hassan?
Yeah, I would concur with my brother Ali there. For example, in the mosque where I come from, they give out light bulbs, energy-saving light bulbs. And that's like just one of the small starts we're making. However, there's a lot more scope for improvement. We need to teach our elders, especially the elders who don't speak so much English, about, you know, turning off the lights when you're not using them, taking your TV off standby. And these small things to the elders make differences for our wider environment. And then to the youngers, teaching them core values, such as, you know, you don't necessarily need to drive to the shop 2 minutes away. You can walk. I mean, God gave you legs. You still have the ability to walk, which is like a common, I'd say, disease in our society, whereas as soon as we get a car, we go everywhere in it. And it's these sort of core things that I think our mosques and our community centres need to start teaching our children, who are still driving age and younger.
I totally agree with you on that point, Brother Hassan. But how are we going to teach the youngsters in our mosques, in our community centres, about the environment without it being the same thing that they've heard day in and day out on TV?
Yeah, no, I mean, I also agree with you in regards to that we need to reinvent our teaching methods. But as long as there's been the religion of Islam, there's always been madrasas where we've taught about the teaching of the Prophet, about the love for Ali, about the rules and boundaries in this religion. And these methods have worked for 1400 years. And there's no reason we should drastically change. But I do agree we need to adapt for modern times. I mean, 5-6 years ago when I was still in madrasa, you know, we started being taught with PowerPoint and things like that. And now we need to start teaching even newer methods. We need to keep, in my opinion, we need to keep up with the way the secular schools teach. I mean, now you use interactive whiteboards, practical classes. There's a lot of interaction from students to teachers as equals. And we need to use those things to teach our methods in madrasas and our community centres. And if you make learning fun, if you make it something they're comfortable with, they'll pick up these messages. Like, when you leave a room, you should turn off the light. Like, there's no point boiling the whole kettle if you're just having one cup of tea. And I think this way forward would be the best way to teach our youths.
Moving on to my final question for today. Staying on the topic of pressure groups, if someone didn't want to commit to joining a pressure group as such, what would be the best way for a Muslim to tackle the moral dilemmas that are faced within this society, other than joining a pressure group?
Fair enough. If people do not want to join pressure groups, there are things that we all can do on a personal level. For example, starting within our own family structure, we can all bring up our children with good morals and Islamic teachings. This will, in effect, then go and help the wider community. Another thing as well I should mention is sometimes there are wrong perspectives of pressure groups as well. For example, in the media we see sometimes, if we go back to Greenpeace as we talked about earlier on, we see sometimes in the media that they only do things like go and protest and they block roads. But there are other campaigns that they've done. For example, they have been very prominent in tackling issues such as banning dumping waste in underdeveloped worlds. Those are issues we don't tend to hear about, but Greenpeace has been going since 1971. We as Muslims have got a duty that whatever we do should always be done for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So it doesn't matter how big it is or how small it is, we should always remember that our intentions are for Allah.
Brother Hassan, would you like to add something?
Yeah, I mean, Brother Ali's right there. I mean, if you don't want to join a pressure group, you could start, everything starts from the home, whether it's teaching religion, teaching your children to be better people, everything starts from the home. But also, we need to understand that as individuals, we can make a massive impact on any level. I mean, it takes one individual to start a revolution. A classic example would be, or actually two classic examples would be, from modern day history, you had the Tiananmen Square incident, where the fellow stood in front of a row of tanks. That individual made a global impact. On the same one, we had the incident in Vietnam, where the monk set himself on fire. That was seen as the picture, or the greatest picture of the 20th century. Both of these two incidents and pictures have been broadcast around the world, and these two individuals in the modern day times have made big influences on how we perceive those countries and those events. So you don't necessarily need to join a pressure group to make a difference, because you as an individual can make a massive difference.
Excellent, thank you very much. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time that we have left for this week. It's interesting how our interactions with this society seem to change with every generation. This is not necessarily a bad thing if our Islamic identity is not forgotten. We have to bear in mind that we should not, at any cost, be apologetic about our faith. In fact, we should hold our heads up high, knowing that our faith can in fact contribute a lot to the fabric of this society. With pressures growing from far-right groups, it is more essential than ever before that we become that model citizen that Islam encourages us to be. Join us next week for another topical discussion. If you have any questions or comments, then you can email us at thenewdawn@themartyr.net. If you wish to donate to the Digital Martyr to support this project or any of our upcoming projects, then please visit www.themartyr.net. Finally, I'd like to thank my guests, Brothers Ali Abdullah and Hassan Ali Walji, and you, the viewers at home. Until next week, this was The New Dawn. I was your host, Nabil Awan. Allah Hafiz. Ma'as-salam.
خلقا ساميا فيه المعالي والأدب فمحمد كيف بشر يأتي بأعجاز الصور ويقص آيات العجب ويقص آيات العجب
ومن أبلسر you with your son the one of love the grace to with him So full of meaning and virtue from heaven Words can't explain the reason of your grace Our hearts just contain a longing for your face
قد أتانا رحمة يئد المفاسد والفتن ويصون أعراف العرب ويصون أعراف العرب
فهو
وبخلقه متكرما
ليس بجاه أو نساب
ليس بجاه أو نساب
Our hearts call for you enchanting as the starry night for you right
أغواني حب المصطفى نبع القداسة والصفا
شتان بينه والذهاب
شتان بينه والذهاب إني الموالي سيدي فاشفع بذاك الموعد يا من به الشكر وجا يا من به الشكر وجا
محمد محمد